Okay, so welcome. So this is the third session on chanting, on balancing sense gratification and, I'll put my recorder here, balancing sense gratification and taste. And so we're trying to understand or clarify the distinction between taste and sense gratification. And sense gratification is simply what it says. It's gratification of the physical body. That's what it is. And the motive behind sense gratification is to enjoy sensual pleasure, which means to see something which is attractive, to hear something which is pleasing, to taste something delicious, something that will satisfy our hunger or will gratify our hunger. To touch something that's smooth, soft, pleasing. And what do we have? We have the eyes and the nose to smell something. And so when those senses are gratified, that's called sense gratification. And the motive behind sense gratification is to gratify those senses. Also, those senses are gratified in Krishna consciousness as well. Right? Aren't they? But the motive is not to gratify them. Right? There's a big difference there. So, the motive is to gratify Krishna's senses. And the higher levels of Krishna consciousness, when a devotee reaches a higher level of Krishna consciousness, the devotee never thinks about his own sense gratification, aside from the basic necessities. He's aware of what the body needs to maintain itself. But his consciousness is never focused on, will this make me happy? Will this not make me happy? His consciousness is always focused on, will this make Krishna happy? Or will this not make, or will this make my guru happy? Will this not make my guru happy? Will this please the devotees? His anxieties are around Krishna's anxieties, that we are often in anxiety about ourselves. Will this work out? Will that work out? It's self-centered. A devotee is in anxiety about, will things work out for Krishna? One time they wanted to get a huge temple. It was very, very expensive. They wanted to buy it. And Prabhupada said, you'll be buying anxiety, so don't get it. And then later on, Prabhupada came back to that city or had spoken to the temple president and said, did you get the temple? And he said, no, we didn't get it, Prabhupada. And he explained what Prabhupada had said before, you know, the cost is so much, we'll be in anxiety about the money. So he said, no, we didn't want to buy anxiety. And Prabhupada said, there must be anxiety. This is very heavy. Prabhupada said, there must be anxiety for Krishna, otherwise there'll be anxiety for ourselves. So all our anxiety should be over how to serve Krishna, how to help other people become Krishna conscious. All our personal consideration should only be in concern of how I can help others. That's a devotee. How I can save others, or how I can help others who are suffering. What can I do to help them become Krishna conscious? That's the attitude of a devotee. That's how a devotee thinks. So, that's how we actually get taste. It's the irony of taste, is that when we are hankering after taste, we don't get it, because hankering after taste is the wrong consciousness to get it. But it's only when we're hankering after pleasing Krishna, never thinking myself as, never calculating according to, well, what makes me happy and what doesn't, what I want, what I don't want, what feels good, what doesn't feel good, but only in terms of what pleases Guru and Krishna, that's when we get taste. Now, taste is a byproduct of pleasing Krishna's senses because we're part of him. So we should never run away from taste. But the thing about taste in Krishna consciousness is it's totally different from the taste of sense gratification, because sense gratification is addictive. The more you get it, the more you want it. And the more you want it, the more attached you become and the more you think about it, and therefore the more you must do it, because as Krishna says, when you contemplate dayatovishayam punsam, then you want to have it. And Patanjali said, attachment comes from remembering the pleasure of an activity. So if you did something and it gave you pleasure, you become attached to it. Obviously, if it didn't give you pleasure, you wouldn't become attached to it, right? You wouldn't want to do it. But if it gives you pleasure, you want to do it over and over again. So, as we engage in satisfying the senses, it creates a bond between our senses and the object. Because Prabhupada said, the senses and the objects of the senses, they have a natural connection. They go together. They're made for one another. So it's very difficult to become detached. So the more we want to enjoy, the more attached we become. So therefore, Shastra says, Guru says, regulate, control the senses. And that's how we break this attachment. And gradually, what happens is we're in a position where we can allow ourselves to get a higher taste. But if we can't control the senses, we're not regulated enough, or we're not controlled enough, or we're not able to practice Krishna consciousness steadily enough that we get a taste, that we can enable ourselves to be in a position to get a taste. So taste is juxtaposed to the pleasure of sense gratification, because when we're hankering after the pleasure of sense gratification, or more specifically when we're engaged in it, it nullifies our ability to get a taste, because now we're tasting sense gratification, and that taste is nullifying the ability to taste Krishna consciousness. It's altering our focus of our consciousness so that we are focused on sense gratification. That's where our mind is. In Krishna consciousness, we control the desire to enjoy sense gratification. Krishna gives us a taste, and that taste nullifies the taste for sense gratification, to the point that when that taste is strong, then when the devotee thinks about his past activities of sense gratification, they're actually disgusting to him. The very things that he used to hanker for, the very things that he used to love to do, love to eat, love to hear, love to talk about, love to see, become detestable. There's absolutely no interest in them. That's the result of taste in Krishna consciousness. And that's why taste is so important, because taste is actually a medicine for counteracting the desire for sense gratification. We need to understand it, as Prabhupada explains it, as the cure or the secret of success. It's really the cure. Taste in Krishna consciousness is really the cure for sense gratification. Then you might say, But Prabhu, you're saying you have to control your senses to get the taste. That's true. But that taste will continually nullify the desire for sense gratification. So in the beginning, yes, you have to force yourself to control yourself. But later on, you don't have to force yourself to control yourself because you have a taste. So when you have a taste for something that's superior to something else, there's no need to control your attraction for that lower thing. It's just not there. And that's why taste is so important. Because if we're relishing Krishna consciousness, it's virtually impossible to relish other things. That's why it's said, one who relishes the Srimad Bhagavatam will never relish any other literature. And you'll see that in your own spiritual life. That the more you relish Krishna consciousness, the more you'll not relish anything else. And that's the platform we're meant to come to, where everything in Krishna consciousness is relishable. Now, the problem is that the external energy of Krishna, it's also his energy, so it's also attractive. And so, as I said before, Prabhupada said, Maya means when things become more attractive than Krishna. So Maya can be very attractive. There are many beautiful things in this world to see, to hear, to taste. But somehow or other, when you're Krishna consciousness, when you have a taste for Krishna, those things which appeared so beautiful to you, they're no longer attractive. They're no longer beautiful. Somehow or other, you're not interested in them. The other morning I was listening to a conversation, and one devotee was telling Prabhupada how some priests are becoming homosexual, some priests are becoming alcoholics, priests now are getting married, they have girlfriends and like that. And Prabhupada said, yes. They must fall down, unless they're getting a taste. Bhakti and Carol, I'm in the Gainesville Temple, Gainesville, Florida, which is about 15 miles from Alachua. We're doing classes here every night on japa. So Prabhupada said, yes, they must fall down. So without Krishna consciousness, we can say it's a guarantee that we will be attracted to Maya, even if we don't want to be, even if we struggle. Just like we have the verse in Bhagavatam, Avrura Krishna Param Param Tata Padantyado Yushmarangraya. Those who don't take shelter of your feet, even they're liberated, they'll come back to engage in material activities because there's no taste there. The taste is at your feet. So it's not like we're fighting Maya with some kind of discipline. We're ultimately fighting Maya through our taste, through our engagement in Krishna consciousness, and thus the relish and the taste we get from serving. So the irony, this is an interesting irony, the irony is that there are things which we are attached to which we believe will make us happy, which we believe will give us a taste. These are called anarthas. And kama, krodha, lobha, moha, matsara, these are different anarthas. So kama means sexual desire. Krodha means anger. Lobha means greed. And then there's matsara, envy, and mada, material madness, to accumulate, to just advance materially. The whole world's mad, completely mad materially. 100% mad, insane over material success. So these anarthas, we think these things, this lust, this greed, they're going to make me happy. And this jealousy, you know, I'll put him down, I'll get ahead, I'll achieve this, I'll achieve that. We think these things will make us happy. But the irony is that the stage of ruchi or taste comes after these anarthas are given up. So the very things that we think will make us happy are the things we have to give up to actually become happy, to come to the stage of tasting. It's a very interesting concept. So if you think of all the thing, material things that you think will give you pleasure, make you happy, those are the things that are preventing you from coming to ruchi. So it's a total irony. Now, we need things to live materially. We need a house, we need food, we need some level of comfort. Many people need to be married. If these things are used in moderation in Krishna consciousness, it's not sense gratification. Or it's sense gratification which is controlled, so it's not detrimental. So that's different. That's a different situation. But otherwise, the very things that we should always understand, okay, I may want something, I may need something. But we should understand this thing is not going to make me happy ultimately. It's not going to give me a taste. It'll make me comfortable. It may make my life easier. That's different than a taste. Just like you get a nice computer, your old computer's causing you trouble. So it makes your life easier. Or you get a car, your old car's breaking down. It makes your life easier. You'll have a nice husband or wife. It makes your life more peaceful. That's great, but that is not ruchi. It's those things which can form the foundation for executing Krishna consciousness and giving you a taste. That's different. You see? It's not sense gratification. It's to be used in Krishna's service. That's all. So your mentality is utilization in Krishna's service. It's not sense gratification. I need a computer. I need a car. I need a decent house. I need a mobile communication device. I need this or that, whatever it is. I want to get a nice one. I don't want it to break down. I want it to be useful. Okay. But there's, you know, within certain parameters. And it's not... parameters are not unlimited. And I'm using this in Krishna's service. So then it's not sense gratification. And then you still, by using those things, you'll still get a taste. But if it's sense gratification, you won't get a taste. Then by trying to enjoy those things, we block ourselves off from getting to the stage of ruchi. So it's an irony of ironies, isn't it? The very things we think will make us happy, if it's in the realm of sense gratification, become the things which block us from coming to anartha nivritti, after which we come and get a taste. Okay. So, if anyone has a question, you can ask it before I go on. We're going to begin reading some things that Prabhupada has said. We have been reading. So I'll wait a minute so you can ask your questions. We have nice sound effects here. We have the street. We have cars going by. We have cats meowing. People walking. Yeah, if you close the windows. Yeah, we're going to close the windows. That'd be nice. Now we have windows closing. Okay, no questions. Am I still broadcasting? Yes. Are you still there? Yes. Okay, so I want to read what Prabhupada said. Everybody's still there, right? Are you all there? Oh yeah, Bhakti and Carol, you're there. Okay. I've heard someone who seemed to never say the actual mantra, didn't say the names in proper order. Why could this be? Different topic. Want to stay on the topic. But I'm not sure what you're asking, but maybe we can deal with that another time. Okay, everybody's here. So let's read some things that Prabhupada has said. Prabhupada's words are very powerful. I love this. This is from a letter. Our business is simply to plant the seed of devotional service wherever we go and to give everyone a taste of this transcendentally relishable activity of life. Isn't that interesting? A lot of us are spreading Krishna consciousness, and now Prabhupada is explaining what we're actually doing or what we should be conscious of what we should be doing. He's saying our business is simply to plant the seed of devotional service. And what is that seed? He says, goes on to say, wherever we go, we give the seed of devotional service wherever we go and give everyone a taste. The seed is the taste. So when we're planting a seed of bhakti in somebody's heart, the idea is we're planting taste. Isn't that interesting? We're planting the seed of taste. So if you can give somebody a taste, what happens if you're bringing someone to Krishna consciousness and they start to get a taste for it, they start to get a transcendental experience. They start to experience something, some pleasure that's beyond bodily pleasure. It is mind-boggling to them because they've never experienced that. Everyone's pleasure is in relation to the body or to the mind. Nobody has experienced pleasure in relation to the soul. They don't know what's going on. It's what builds faith. It's a tangible experience. If we can give people a tangible experience of Krishna consciousness, it's a huge faith builder. What can build better faith than experience? And this experience is transcendental. It has nothing to do with any pleasure of this world. And when people get it, what happens? They start coming more towards Krishna consciousness. Something changes. They want more Krishna consciousness. They want to get more of that taste. So isn't that nice? I mean, I think we see this if you're ever doing anything to help people become Krishna conscious. You see, once they get a taste, things change. And so what's nice about it is we see that the same thing continues for us even after we're practicing devotional service. That taste keeps us going, 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 going. We require taste. We want the taste. We need the taste. It's not sense gratification. It's not a taste of sense gratification. It's something much greater. So, Let me go back and see if you have any questions on that. So Bhakti Kira says, I was thinking in relation to having a taste. A taste is honed by attraction to japa and name. Shown. Okay, let me read your question again. I've heard someone who seemed to never say the actual mantra didn't say the names in proper order. I meant shown the mantra, but didn't, is that what you mean? But didn't say, why could it be? I'm not sure, but yeah, taste comes in japa by chanting properly. Ultimately what we understand is taste comes by purification of the senses, because Krishna is already tasteful. It's just our ability to taste it. So as we chant properly, then Krishna purifies our senses, we get mercy of the holy name, our senses become purified, and then we taste it. And then we can taste more and more of it as we become more and more purified. So taste is a symptom that we're chanting well. Generally, we can understand that if we're chanting well, there'll be a taste. Yes. That is good. Okay. I'm just looking at this other quote to see if I want to read it. Anyway, it relates to your question. It's from the Harinam Chintamani. If one performs the sacrifices prescribed in the Karmakanda with the desire for material gain, that is called cheating. So using shastra for material gain is called cheating. If one has desire and faith in the happiness of material objects, one will ask for material results from a sacrifice. But if one can execute one's activities without interest in these material results, one's heart will become purified. So here, motivation, we come back to the topic of motivation. Motivation is everything. This is the actual purpose of karmakanda. Karmakanda means fruitive actions, as outlined in the Vedas, but the purpose is to become purified from the fruitive desire. When one's heart is purified, one's interest and taste for culturing bhakti begins. So if the motive is to gain something material, then that taste doesn't awaken. The attraction doesn't awaken, because then one is just fixed in material consciousness, but using spiritual practices or principles to advance materially. So it doesn't help. It's what that mentality has to be changed. When one's heart is purified, one's interest and taste for culturing bhakti begins. By chanting the holy name, bhakti develops and matures. Thus it can be seen that the end result of karmakanda is to come to taste the holy name, at least if those activities are done properly. So what we gain from this is we can say that the goal of all our activities ultimately is to taste Krishna consciousness. That's an interesting concept, isn't it? You know, the goal is to taste. I want to emphasize this, the importance of this, because I think it's really important that we focus on the concept of taste as an experience which results from relishing Krishna consciousness with purified senses and has nothing to do with material motivation. And that taste is what is bringing us or drawing us more and more towards Krishna. Just as material taste is what is drawing us more and more towards Maya. And so it's either going to be Krishna or Maya. So if there's this idea in your mind, well, taste, I shouldn't want taste, or it's not the right thing, then understand that we'll always be motivated by taste. So it's just a question of what we're tasting. So when we understand that, then we understand the importance of tasting Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, I'll be hanking for material taste. And there was one lecture Prabhupada gave, and he said, well, how do you monitor in your own life whether you're becoming Krishna conscious or not? And Prabhupada said, by your detachment. Excuse me. By your detachment, by your freedom from sex desire. That's how you know. So as we see ourselves becoming more inclined towards Krishna consciousness, more attracted, that we're tasting more, it's a good sign. It's a healthy sign. That means it's working, we're doing it right. If we see ourselves becoming more attracted to material things, more absorbed, more desirous of hearing mundane topics, listening to songs and music not in relation to Krishna, watching things not in relation to Krishna, not things which we cannot employ in Krishna service or in some way benefit us to be used in Krishna service or just to benefit us in a way that we can maintain ourselves in this world more easily so we have more time for Krishna service. Then we understand, okay, I must be doing something wrong. I must not be applying the process properly, or I'm thinking improperly, or I'm chanting improperly, or I'm associating improperly, or I'm wanting to get something from Krishna. This is very good, very, very good that we can monitor ourselves by our taste. I've said many times that Mahaprabhu says, how do you know advanced devotee? You know by taste for the holy name. That's how you know. Taste for the holy name is how you know who is advancing. Now look at it this way. Materialists are attracted to material things. So it would be reasonable, just even if you don't know about Krishna consciousness, it would be reasonable to assume that one who's advancing spiritually would be more absorbed in spiritual things, not interested in getting ahead materially, not interested in lust, anger, greed, envy, and so forth, but interested in the spiritual realm. Naturally, we would think that way. So those advancing in Krishna consciousness, it would be natural to assume they're tasting more and more and more the more they advance. We wouldn't assume that someone's an advanced devotee, but they have no attraction for hearing. They have no attraction for chanting. It wouldn't make any sense. But it would make sense that they have extreme attraction for hearing. It would make sense that they want to chant more than 16 rounds, that 16 isn't enough. It would make sense that they can go they could go for hours and hours, day after day, just hearing and chanting about Krishna. It would make sense that they want to be engaged always. And it would make sense that if one is not advancing spiritually, they wouldn't want to. So taste, we have to see taste also in our life as a barometer, as a guiding post, a guiding light for our spiritual advancement. So that's another important aspect of taste. We should want it, we should pray for it, we should hanker for it, but understand it's not something that we enjoy. I want taste so I can enjoy. Because our concept of enjoyment, it always goes back to physical enjoyment. So we don't want taste to enjoy physically. And that's where we get confused. But isn't it bad? I shouldn't pray for taste. Isn't it bad? No. We want taste to advance our service. Different idea there. Nice concept. We want taste because it'll help us advance our service. It'll help us become a better devotee. And what did we read? What did Prabhupada say? Our business is to plant the seed of devotional service wherever we go and give everyone a taste of this transcendentally relishable activity of life. How do we give a taste? Because we're tasting it. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, Mahaprabhu tasted Krishna consciousness, tasted the nectar of love of God, and then tasted the fruits of love of God and distributed those fruits. So the more we're tasting those fruits, the more people we contact will be able to taste it as well. So taste is not only a necessary element for purifying our senses, for inspiring us in Krishna consciousness, for detaching it, but it's also necessary to inspire others. So we're praying for taste, that Krishna, please give me a taste, I want a taste. It's not to enjoy, but it's to serve. When you get a taste for the holy name, it's not going to make you want to enjoy sense gratification. Don't worry about getting a taste. Oh, I shouldn't pray for taste. I should just pray for pure devotional service. No. When you get a taste, it's going to detach you from everything material. Taste is going to inspire you to be a better devotee. It's going to inspire you in Krishna consciousness. So you want a taste. You pray for a taste. You're begging. And it's Krishna's reward to you to give you a taste. Krishna, please give me a taste, because that taste will inspire me more and more in your service. Have you ever got a taste for chanting? I'm sure you all have. So what happens when you get the taste? Do you think, oh, now that I've got a taste, I want to go to the movies? No. It's when you don't get a taste, then you think, now I want to go to the movies. That's the difference. So don't think, well, I won't pray for taste, I'll just pray for pure devotional service. Praying for taste is pure devotional service. So now I'm going to check out if there are any questions, comments. Okay. That is a powerful statement. We will always be motivated by taste. So it depends on what we taste. Yeah. It's true. I mean, what's our taste? Television? What's your favorite show on television? What's your taste? What draws you to something? And we discussed this last week. What draws you to something is your taste for it. What draws you to Krishna? It's your taste for Krishna. Right? So if it's our taste for Krishna that draws us, certainly we want more and more taste. Very important. It's essential, actually, in our spiritual life. If we're not getting a taste, we're just struggling, and we don't want to struggle. I mean, sometimes we can't avoid it. We have to. Patience, determination, utsahan, enthusiasm, it's all necessary. But if we're doing it properly, the result will be taste, and that taste will be the motivating factor. In fact, what the acharyas tell us, they say that devotional service, until we come to the stage of ruchi, it will be difficult, it'll be troublesome, it'll require intense amounts of determination. But once you come to the stage of ruchi, then it's downhill. It's like we're riding our bike uphill. It's difficult. Anartha nivritti, trying to get rid of anarthas. You get to the top of the hill, and then, you shoot down the hill. Why is it like that? Because in the stage of ruchi, everything in bhakti is motivated by your taste. And in material consciousness, what we're dealing with and trying to be Krishna consciousness is that we have this taste for material things. So there's so much motivation for material things. We're trying to control it. But in the stage of ruchi, you don't try to control it because you have taste for Krishna, which is so strong, it's your motivating factor for everything. And so there's no battle with the mind and senses. There's no question of battling it. You see, the thing is, thank you, Carol, you're very kind. So the thing is, well, Prabhupada's sitting here in the temple room. Maybe Prabhupada's speaking and I'm just a mouthpiece. I hope that's the case. Roma wants to know what I just said. I forgot. What did I just say? That taste is the... when you come to the stage of ruchi, then your bhakti is motivated not by rules and regulations, not by force. Oh, I have to get up, I have to chant, I have to worship the deity, I have to read the Bhagavatam. I'd rather be, you know, listening to music right now, or I'd rather be in bed. At the stage of ruchi, everything you do is motivated by the taste to do it. Freezing for some seconds, I could, let's see, oh yeah. What I'll do is I'll reload. It just froze. Hold on, I'll reload. Is that better now? I just reloaded. Let me know if that's better or the same or better. Yes, it's fine. Okay. So Ruchi comes after anartha nivritti. In the stages below where you have these anarthas, you battle with desires other than Krishna. And the stages where we have anarthas draw us in to think about ourself. And so when we're thinking about ourself, if you just watch your mind, just observe your mind, you'll see how self-absorbed the mind is. And we're always thinking in terms of, will this make me happy? Or will this not make me happy? Will I like this one? I like this. And I was saying earlier, when you're in the stage of ruchi, that consciousness it's not there, it doesn't bother you. You don't think about yourself anymore. That's not where your world is anymore. Your world is, what does Krishna want? What does Guru want? How I can help other people. And that's how you become effective as a teacher and a preacher, because you're concerned about other people. Your concerns are not... You're concerned about yourself in terms of your level of Krishna consciousness. You're concerned about your basic maintenance of your health and your basic emotional mental sanity. But that doesn't take much effort or much... It doesn't take much energy of your consciousness. Your main consciousness is how I can use every moment of my life to help other people. Now, you might say, well, I'm going to school, I'm working. Okay, but that's all part of it. But even within that, you have to do what you have to do to maintain yourself. But even within that, you can be thinking how to give Krishna consciousness to others. So when you're in that stage, that's where you get the taste. And then everything that you do in that stage, in the stage of ruchi, it's just the attraction for Krishna is so strong that... And the pleasure from that is so strong, you can't possibly even imagine in anywhere in your consciousness getting any pleasure from doing something so-called to please yourself. It won't register as pleasure in your mind. So the problem that we face now is that it does register as pleasure in our mind, and that's why we're motivated to do it. And that's why we have to discipline ourselves and control ourselves, because if we don't, then we get more attached to it, and it actually becomes pleasurable because we're in the consciousness that it can be pleasurable. Like Prabhupada talked a lot about sex in a very demeaning way to indicate that it's just an itch, animals do it, there's no pleasure. Now, if you're in a high stage of consciousness and you think about sex, you'll say, yeah, compared to Krishna consciousness, this isn't pleasure at all. But if you're in a lower stage of consciousness, it's everything to you. It's the whole thing. Everything is centered around it. It's the highest pleasure you're looking for. So the state of consciousness you're in determines your ability to perceive what is pleasurable, or to perceive transcendental pleasure, and to perceive material pleasure. So in this stage of Krishna consciousness, you can't perceive material pleasure as pleasure. It's just, it won't, it's like... Let's say you go into a fruit and vegetable market and there's rotting vegetables and rotting fruits, and you're not going to think, oh, this looks good, I'll eat it. Now, if you're somebody, a homeless person, and you don't have any money, and you go in there and you say to the owner, can I have these because no one's going to buy them? He'll say, sure. And to you, it's good because you have nothing. It's better than nothing. But for everyone else, it's not going to register as pleasure because you can buy fresh fruit, that's good. So in the same way, when you have a taste in Krishna consciousness, these other pleasures, they don't register. Oh, this connection is not good. You have any idea why? They say it keeps freezing.
There's a lot of people using it.
Right now?
Yeah.
Everybody's online now. So if you miss something, just let me know. I'll say it again. What I've been saying is not freezing for Ajinkya. See, better connection from India. If it's freezing, then why don't you just... okay. Pallavi, maybe you have to refresh it. So just like... So this is what we understand. If you ever listen to Prabhupada speak about material life, he speaks about it in a way in which you can see, from his perspective, he sees nothing in material life whatsoever. No pleasure, but only displeasure. And that he sees all pleasure in Krishna consciousness because that's his experience on a moment-to-moment basis. And he's trying to bring that as a guru. He's trying to bring that us up to that experience and give us that taste. That's why Prabhupada liked it so much when devotees chanted and danced in ecstasy, because when we get that taste, that experience, that motivates us, and it nullifies material attraction. And that's why taste is so important, because taste is a medicine. It's the medicine which nullifies material attraction. So you get to this point where you'll look at material. I mean, someday we'll get to this point where we'll look at material, the so-called attractive things of this material world, and we'll look at it, and we won't be able to figure out how there's any pleasure in it. Wouldn't you like that stage? You just look at it, and you'll think, how is there any pleasure in this? Just like something new comes out, like, you know, the people do something weird, like, I don't know, what's something weird people do? Like some new sport or something at some carnival, and they're, you know, on some ride or something. And you'll look at it, and you'll go, that looks disgusting. And the people, they're enjoying it. But from your perspective, it'd say, that, or like maybe you don't like, look at a roller coaster and people come off the roller coaster and they're vomiting and they're nauseous and they're dizzy. And you look at it and think, this is crazy. But somebody on it is like having a great time. So in the same way in Krishna consciousness, you'll look at things, material things, and you'll say, I can't understand how that's pleasure. It doesn't register as pleasure to me. It only registers as suffering. That's because of your taste. But if it's not registered that way, that means we're lacking in taste because anarthas are still there. So at least we have to intellectually understand, yes, this is suffering. And by our determination, regulate our senses. But when you come to the stage of taste, where's the regulation? You're not attracted. There's nothing to regulate. Material senses don't need regulation because they're not attracted. Does that make sense? Makes sense to me. Yeah, so that's why devotee prays for taste, because taste is our safeguard. And I know a lot of you out there have this conception that wanting taste is material. And some devotees say, well, I'll go on in Krishna consciousness even if I don't get a taste. But my point is, number one, if you're going on well in Krishna consciousness, you will get a taste. So that statement is not even accurate. It's, I'll go on in Krishna consciousness even if I don't get a taste. That means you're not going on in Krishna consciousness if you don't get a taste, because taste is a stage up. And the second stage is, you know, when they're saying, well, I'll just go on even if Krishna doesn't give me a taste. No, but you should want a taste. So now Roma has a question. I'm going through a similar thing here at university. People seem to be enjoying themselves fully by getting drunk, going to clubs, screaming and shouting, but it is not attractive for me at all. But I have to ensure I don't get too repulsed by this and to accept my situation more. I'll tell you a story. I became a devotee when I was going to college, and yeah, your only shelter, your real shelter is your japa and your deity worship and your hearing and your reading and your internet friends. So I was going to college in Berkeley, and I came to Krishna consciousness that way. And I was going two nights a week to study Bhagavad Gita. And so the devotees were very, very young. They're very new. And they didn't know a lot about the philosophy. So practically every class they were saying the same thing. You're not the body. You're spirit soul. You're part and parcel of Krishna. You're eternal. You're suffering in the material world. We're living like animals. There's birth, old age, disease, and death. Saying similar things like this. I swear, every class I went to, I heard that I was suffering. But I didn't think I was suffering. It just didn't register. I was 19. 19-year-old bodies don't suffer. Maybe 19-year-old minds suffer a little bit, but their bodies don't. I was going to college. The university system, at least at that time when I was going to school in Berkeley, it was not that difficult. So, and I wasn't working, and my parents were paying for the apartment, the car, and the college, and my expenses, it wasn't that expensive in those days. So all I had to do was go to school, and school meant like 3 or 4 hours a day. between school and homework, at least as I remember it. It was more as a freshman. That was my second year. And I don't remember it. I remember I had a lot of time, and I had a lot of time on the weekends. There was no big papers to write every week and so forth. So I was, you know, I was living it up. I had my friends. I was raised in Los Angeles, and my friends were up there. I had some friends in Berkeley, a lot of friends in Berkeley. I had friends living over in Marin County, which was a really nice place, north of San Francisco, mountains and beaches. And so I'd hang out with them, and, you know, we weren't living with our parents and doing all kinds of nefarious activities that one should not mention on Christian.com. Or were sitting in the temple room, but things that young people did in 1969. So if you don't know what they did, go Google it, and you'll find out what they did. And so I was, you know, I wasn't living at home. I mean, this was life was good. And every time I go to the temple, they'd say, "You're suffering," and it wasn't registering. It was just like, "What are you talking about? I'm not suffering," you know. I just go to a few classes a day, and I go see my friends in Marin County, and my friends are here. We get together, and we get high every weekend, and just drive around, and it's all good. And the girls on campus, they're all beautiful, and it's all good. So after about 2 months, 2.5 months, it hit me. It finally hit me that I'm suffering. And I looked around at everybody on the street, everybody in school, and I thought, they've got big smiles on their faces, but they're suffering. It just like it like hit me. So I had come to this point because I was advancing in Krishna consciousness that I could actually experience something better than just being a college student freeloading on his parents' money and just getting by so he could stay in, just getting passing grades so he could stay in school and have a good time while at college. I could begin to understand that suffering, that I'm not really happy. So that's how taste insulates us. That's how it protects us. But if I wasn't getting the taste, how would I understand that that lifestyle, how would I understand that it's really not suffering unless I was going through intense emotional distress, which I really wasn't. There was nothing in my life that was that difficult or that depressing. And even if it is, a lot of people don't get it. A lot of people go through suffering and they never give up. They're like the dog. You keep hitting the dog, telling him to go away, and he keeps coming back. Some people are like that. They never, ever, ever give up. I don't know if you know people like that, but I know many people like that. They never give up, and they suffer, and they never give up. They don't get it. We need some spiritual experience. And that's the value of the Krishna consciousness movement. We give spiritual experience. Right? And if you give spiritual experience, if you can get people, you know, if you can get people to chant 16 rounds a day, wow, they're finished. 1 or 2 weeks, it's finished. Their material life is, they're going to look at their life and go, what the have I been doing? Because you get people in every couple times a week to go to a kirtan, to hear a Bhagavatam class, to get sangha with blissful devotees. Your material life, what that taste is doing, it's eating away at their material life. That's the process of preaching Krishna consciousness, giving people a taste. So Prabhupada, if you look at his preaching, he was just trying to make people happy because he knew if they were happy in Krishna consciousness, they would stay and they would become detached from material life. So he just wanted everyone to be happy, somehow or other doing service in any way they could, just be happy in Krishna consciousness. And he knew everything would be fine. So that's it. There you go, folks. Don't be afraid of taste. Don't run away from it. Don't be afraid of material taste. Be afraid of being motivated to enjoy Krishna consciousness. I'm going to serve Krishna so I can enjoy, so I can get a position, so I can get honor, so I can get money. No. Then you'll not taste anything. You want to get a position to serve, not to enjoy. That's it. And that's the way you'll enjoy it, by being a servant. By being a humble servant, Krishna will give you the nectar of devotion, the nectar of spiritual enjoyment. But you'll never enjoy by having power, by manipulating people, by getting position. It's a huge illusion. Huge illusion. So, any other questions? We have 6 minutes. Because I'm not going over at 9 o'clock, because I still have 4 rounds to chant, and I have a phone call to make. And I'm starving, and I hope you have prasadam. You have? He's going to get me prasadam. Okay. Well, I could talk to you while I eat if you want. I'll do that much. So, yes. Any other questions or points? Don't be afraid of taste. Be afraid of sense gratification. That's the idea. Don't be afraid of tasting Krishna consciousness. Be afraid of enjoying Krishna consciousness, because taste and enjoyment are different. No, Roma, I'm inspiring because you're listening. And so because you're listening and you want to learn, I'm getting inspired. And if you weren't so eager to hear, I would just be babbling. Blah, 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 blah. I wouldn't know what to say. It's not just the speaker, it's the audience. They go together. That's the Prakshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami. There must be a proper speaker and a proper listener. And when the listener is eager to hear, the speaker can speak so many things. Even the speaker may never be able to speak them again, but he can speak them. I like to inspire you to go further in Krishna consciousness and to always go further in Krishna consciousness. And if I can inspire you to get a taste, then naturally that will inspire you. And so, you know, that has to be one of our goals. Ajinkya Prabhu says, Prabhu, while everything is going normal, why do we get spiritual suddenly? I mean, we get taste suddenly someday. Why does it happen? Oh, you mean, you're saying, if we're just going through the normal routines, why did we get a taste? Or if we're going through a normal life, why did we become interested in Krishna consciousness? Well, I could try to answer both questions. I think you're asking the second question. Start with the second part, because you're going on in devotional service steadily. And so Krishna wants to give you a taste, but he wants to give it to you according to what you can handle. And if all of a sudden, if you became a devotee and then you got this huge taste, you know, in the beginning, the first few months, just incredible taste, you may not be able to deal with it properly because you're not mature enough. You might even become proud. You might think, well, I'm more advanced than other people. So Krishna gives us taste according to the advancement we make, and it's slow. And then sometimes we're doing better, so he gives us more taste. And sometimes he just wants to say, here, I'm happy with you, here's taste. Or sometimes what's happening is through the process of Krishna consciousness, as our senses are becoming more purified, then we're able to taste Krishna, or a combination of all of those. But I would say that if you're getting taste, that means Guru and Krishna are pleased. That Prabhupada is pleased. Mahaprabhu is pleased. Krishna is pleased. So because they're pleased, or the Vaishnavas are pleased, you're getting something. And so it's a good sign. You should be thankful. Thank you, Krishna, for giving me this taste. Or Krishna may see that you need help and he may drop a little taste because he knows it'll help you. Here, Ajinkya, here's some taste. It'll push you. You need help now. Ajinkya says, I mean, we're on a particular level and one day we suddenly experience more taste. What makes it happen? Now I need another plate. All right, otherwise I have to eat in my lap. Okay, hold on. You're going to have to talk more than I am because I'm going to eat now while we're talking. Video froze, it's the answer. Uh-oh. Okay, I'll reload. I've just reloaded, and can turn that off. Huh? Okay, so the answer was that, three answers. Krishna may just want to give it to you to help you. You may be purifying yourself, and so gradually you're getting it. You're gradually getting it just from your purification. Krishna may give you a little more to encourage you. He may give you a little more to help you because you need it. He may give you a little more to confirm that you're on the right track. But it's part, but you should understand that it's part of the practice of bhakti that you'll get a taste. Okay. So now I'm going to turn the recorder off. And I